Welcome to Dateline New Haven on WNHH New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. Well, Ward 26 is ticking in New Haven. That's Upper Westville and Beverly Hills. I always love reminding people that there's a neighborhood called Beverly Hills in New Haven. It's on a hill. And that's where a contest for alder is taking place at the November 2nd election. It's a rematch involving two very interesting people, a Democrat, Darrell Brackeen, who's also running for Secretary of State, and he's been an alder for 8 years. He's a Democrat, and it's an overwhelmingly Democratic ward. And Joshua Van Hoosen's taking him on for the second time. He's a Republican. He didn't win last time, but I think he's hoping he's going to win this time. Absolutely. I don't know. Let's find out. Josh is in the WNHA studio right now. Josh, you going to win this time?
Hopefully so. You know, I've been out knocking, talking with residents. I've gotten some extremely positive feedback. So fingers crossed, here's to hoping. But my big goal is always to get people out there and voting, no matter who they're voting for.
And I forgot the numbers now. I think it was something like 100 to 1, the registration, or it was like 1,700 to like 100. So I guess that's only 17 to 1.
Yeah. So
the difference between Democrat and Republican voters in your ward.
Yep. Yeah. I believe it's 1,700 to 155.
So you're an IT guy. You would never set 100 to 1. You would have had it more accurate, right?
Yeah. I'm a little bit devil of the details sort of person.
And then you don't have tons of independents, but you have more unaffiliated than Republicans, correct?
Correct.
So what's your strategy? How do you run as a Republican in a 17 to 1 Democratic district against a four-term incumbent?
Easily. I go out, I knock doors, I talk to individuals, and I let them know the benefits that I want to bring to the city.
Okay, and I'm going to have to get closer to the mic. So, Josh, have you hit a lot of doors? Like, how many doors have you hit?
So, I'm closing in on all of them at this point. So, I've got another subsection that I got to clear off this week, but I essentially split the entire ward into four sections. And then I've been slowly but surely going out every single weekend, walking at least 6 miles, knocking doors and talking with individuals.
And do you have a team of people working with you?
So I do have a team of people working with me, but I don't have a team of individuals who are necessarily passing out information for me. So if you get a knock on your door, if you have information on your door, that means I was there personally.
So you've been solo hitting the doors. What are your people helping you with who aren't hitting the doors?
So they've been helping me with some of the organizational stuff. They've been helping me with some of the promotional materials, kind of messaging, different perspectives on how I can address issues.
So they're giving you feedback?
Yeah, absolutely.
But are they doing any outreach, any kind of house parties, anything like that?
No, I am doing a meet and greet. We haven't necessarily been doing, especially with COVID, we haven't been doing a lot of like in-person things, right? But we have done community questionnaire sessions. So my campaign manager has found individuals within the community, and then we've done one-on-one sessions with them to kind of get feedback and see their perspective on things and kind of grow exposure within the neighborhood. I know at least some of the folks have then talked with their neighbors afterwards, and I've gotten communications from individuals wanting for more information to understand what I'm about.
So, and I'm going to ask you what you're about. So you've run for alder a bunch of times. You ran for alder 2 years ago in the same district when you bought a house on West Prospect Street. Very nice street.
Yep.
And I think so. Nice houses. And it's a real community. It's dense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but not too dense.
Right.
My sister actually lives a stone's throw from you at the B'nai B'rith housing, which is a really nice development. The senior housing there.
Yep.
And then you ran before that as an alder in Morris Cove when you lived there.
Correct.
Did you also run for state rep once?
I did, but that was more of a paper candidate thing, and honestly, something I would never do again in that regard. Maybe I would run for state rep, but I would never run just to be a name on the ballot. I would run, and it really kind of opened my eyes to the whole political process and got me to understand like the portions that I want to reinforce and the portions that I think as a country we can just kind of leave in the dust.
Tell me about that. What should we leave in the dust as a country?
Kind of this like Republican versus Democrat. And I think we see it in a recognition of individuals of the same perspective, because there's a big shift to independent unaffiliated kind of across the board.
And I've always wondered when that's going to hit New Haven. I think it a little bit did with the independent minded in the mayoral races and the phenomenon of Justin Elker, but that was still a Democratic vote.
Yeah.
Because you have that big growth in unaffiliated voters statewide. They're the biggest group of voters.
Yeah.
But they still vote only for Democrats pretty much for Congress. It's different for governor, but even that since 2010, we've had had Democratic governors as well. In New Haven, my guess is that just looking at the numbers, let's say in Ward 7, that it's really just the even number years when there are presidential races in Congress that you get those unaffiliateds out. They don't seem to care about local politics yet. What are you thinking about that?
No, so I would agree. And I think part of the issue is that a lot of people don't necessarily care about local politics or municipal elections, which I'm going to pat myself a little on the back for. So I ran into a woman while knocking, and she has never voted in a municipal election before. She's going to be out voting this year.
What street was she on?
Oh, my goodness. Kohari?
Yeah, Kohari Drive.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
And what reason did you give her? How'd the conversation go?
So the conversation went, my name is Josh Van Hoosier. I'm one of the candidates for Alder in this year's municipal election. You know, going around the neighborhood, introducing myself and wanting to learn about individuals' perspective on the city of New Haven. And we just kind of got into a conversation about, you know, everything that's going on. And I went, hey, you know, some of the biggest impacts that you can make is on the local level. Like, I know in the news, everything is sort of national and state, but some of the biggest decisions that impact our day-to-day lives are right here in New Haven. And after that conversation, she was like, you know, wow, didn't quite think of it that way. You know,
was there a particular issue you talked about? What was she worried about? Was it crime? I know people worried about break-ins on Kohari.
Yeah, so it's more crime. It's seeing some of the things that the city has said that they want to accomplish, actually seeing them follow through.
Like what?
So, you know, we had the pension commission that was formed, and then they didn't...
still meeting, yeah.
Right. But they hadn't met for a while, a long while. And then they met again when, all of a sudden this came up, and it's now an emergency once more. But we still don't seem to be working towards, kind of the best solutions. Uh-huh. It's something that I'd like to see changed. It was actually one of the policy points that I talked to her about. So I know the Board of Alders have previously discussed bonding out to help reduce our pensions, and something
by making upfront comments, payments, so that we don't have the debt.
Yep, correct. And I know it's something that we've talked about on the short on the show.
Yeah, what's your current position on that? Because I remember pensions were a biggie for you.
Right. So my position on that is, instead of bonding out, we should take advantage of a state program called the Municipal Pension Solvency Program.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Which would allow, not that I think bonding out is necessarily the best option, but sometimes it's the only option. But that would allow us to bond out at the state's rate instead of New Haven's rate.
How different is that?
So New Haven is currently at a BBB, which is positive stable by Fitch, and the state is at an A+. Definitely A+ is better than BBB, therefore lower interest rates, less payments for New Haven in the long term.
And why isn't that under consideration?
I don't.
And how does one get into that program?
So you would have to contact the state in regards to it, state treasurer.
Well, Joshua Van Hoosen is running again for Alder as a Republican, Ward 26, Upper Westfield, Beverly Hills. Why do you keep doing it? Is it fun? Do you feel like you're going to win at some point? Like, why are you going against the trends of both Democratic monopoly on political office in New Haven and voter registration, and the new trend of all politics no longer local, as you pointed out? Yeah. This kind of love Trump, hate Trump has become the defining issue in races all over, playing out even the Guilford School Board about whether, you know, you should murder people on a school board because they want to save kids' lives with vaccines. Goodness. Yeah, so
that's
like,
ridiculous.
So why are you going up against those trends?
Oh, goodness. So, you know, I've always been interested in systems and the development systems and, you know, efficient and effective systems. And from my perspective, the city has not done a good job in necessarily implementing those, either from a policy or a legislative standpoint. So things get lost and dropped, and it hurts the residents in the long term. So that's why I want to be on the Board of Alders, to help bring my experience and my skill set to help them accomplish the goals that they want to accomplish in an effective manner.
So you gave me pensions. What are some others?
Yeah, so we've got pensions. We just kind of have the follow through on some of the goals that we have. So, for example, you know, the CRB, once it was...
That's a civilian review board to monitor the police.
Yep, correct. So once it was put into place, there was a lot of confusion in regards to how does this operate? How do individuals get on? I had personal experience in regards to this because I'm chair of the Westville West Hills CMT, and the CMTs were supposed to be used as kind of the funnel onto that program. But there was no real definition to that process before it was in legislation. And that's inappropriate from my perspective. Like, we should, especially when we can, have some of these processes defined and laid out before they are in, you know, in place.
So CRB process for, I mean, CMT process for CRB, Community Management Team Funnel for Civilian Review Board.
Yeah, correct.
Pension, I thought, was a biggie. What are some other systems fixes you want to?
So our budgetary process, that one is... always an unfortunate one for me. And the big unfortunate piece of that is that we always believe Yale is going to give us this big old chunk of money.
Yeah, to give it. I think they are going to give the amount we're counting on.
They are at this point.
Yeah.
That would be great, but is not a way to balance a budget.
Yeah. So what would you do instead?
So, and this was actually something that I've disagreed with my fellow Republicans on previously. So like when Elicker proposed his budget that had the tax increase, I disliked the tax increase, but I thought it was a proper way to address a budget issue over, you know, money out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that we had seen previously with former administrators, not the Elicker administration per se, was that when instead of doing these small, you know, tax increases, and someone can plan for like a 1%, a 2%, a 3%.
What was his?
His was 3%, or 3.3%,
mm-hmm.
Which is a far cry shorter than the, you know, 11%+ increases we had seen under previous administrations when they decided that Yale was going to promise all this money, and then at the end of the day, we had to figure it out. That then builds up, and then that means you have to take extreme measures in following years.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I don't want extreme measures. I want a stable New Haven. You know, mm-hmm. I want a place that people can plan. What's next year going to look like? What's 2 years going to look like? You know, I plan on raising my children here one day. I would like a stable environment for that to occur.
Mm-hmm. So what would be some examples on budget process besides not taking extreme measures?
Hmm. Well, part of it is I think we have to look at the charter in general about how the budgeting process
works.
Well,
that's just a good timing if you get elected because the charter revision's coming up.
Yep, absolutely.
So what would you like to see in the charter?
Oh, my goodness. I would like to see some more checks and balances when it comes to the departments and the information that they're presenting back to the finance committee. I would like to see some requirements put in place. And, you know, when you're talking about school budgets, it's always a weird kind of gray area
because they're not a city department, so we can say yes or no to the city contribution to the school budget, but we have no oversight over the big amount of money they get from the state, and they are a state chartered
entity. Correct. And necessarily like how they then at the end of the day determine how to divvy up that money in turn.
Right.
But one thing that I do think that they should be doing, which is something that they tried once before, but my understanding is that they futzed up the paperwork, is that there should be a requirement that they are asking for the, it's not refunds, it's kind of the payback from other municipalities for the students that we mm-hmm. educate through the New Haven school system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would help with some of the budgetary issues.
So get the reimbursement supposed to get. Now, I'm surprised you brought these things both up as charter revision. Why do you need a charter? Like our constitution. I know you're a constitution guy. Why would you have in the constitution that the finance department has to give more financial information? And I do see the reports they give the alders. They have a lot of info in there, right?
Yeah, there is, but it's more kind of the steps for the process and the order of operations in which we do things. And if I recall correctly, so the public input is typically after all of the department heads have presented, which makes it difficult to a degree because then residents can't necessarily point out issues or highlight things that they would like to see changed or the monetary side.
They can't do it in time for the department has to deal with it.
Yeah, correct.
Now, are you talking then about the annual budget process? Or are you talking about the monthly reports that they get from the finance?
Annual budget process.
So annual process, you would like to see department heads follow the public.
Yeah, I think
so. Their questions.
I just think that the whole process can kind of be looked over and streamlined.
And that would be in the charter, you think, rather than just a practice of the board?
So I believe part of it would have to be, and I have to double check that because I would hate to say something.
And the same thing about school reimbursements. Like, so that's not a policy change that we're going to get reimbursements from the suburbs for kids, who come to our schools. Why would it be in the charter to require them to do something they're already required to do?
So that wouldn't necessarily be a charter side of things. The budgetary process, I believe that does to be a charter thing because I believe it is defined in there what the steps and what order they are. For the requiring a request from other municipalities for the children we educate in New Haven, I don't necessarily think that.
So that all comes that comes again under your systems fixes.
Yeah.
Correct. You think we could be just running better ship?
Absolutely.
Which is sort of the tradition of Jonathan Einhorn, Roz Berman, who were Ward 25 Republican alders for decades while the rest of the city, they were some of the last Republicans to hold office. That's where they came from. And they were, so you would see bumper stickers in New Haven in the Reagan era with like Einhorn and all the Democrats, like Pat Dillon, Bruce Morrison, and then you'd have Roz Byrne before that, who was a labor Republican in the, but it wasn't Ward 26, it was Ward 25, but it was like right next door. And yep. It was kind of that vibe. And we're talking to Joshua Van Hoosen, running for alder. He's 31 years old, an IT guy, right?
Not necessarily IT. So it's computer program and software engineering. And technically at this point, I am the director of engineering, which is a super fancy title, but I don't really do much different than I've been doing for years.
So you're a director of engineering at a software firm.
Yeah, so we write accounting software for nonprofit organizations, and we also mm-hmm. write custom financial processes for other companies that are implementing what are known as ERP systems.
Which what are ERP?
Enterprise Resource Planning. And New Haven actually uses an ERP system as well. Most large organizations do in one way or another, though the city uses one called Municipal, from my understanding, which was mm-hmm. developed by a company also in Connecticut, which I support kind of keeping businesses local.
So what are you hearing on the doors? Is crime the biggie? Is COVID the biggie? What are people caring about in Ward 26?
So crime's a big one. You just kind of have quality of life issues.
Like the noise? The
Yep, like the noise. Communication, so that's actually a big one. A lot of people just don't necessarily know where to go to get the information that they need or they want. You know, I have given so many people the numbers to like, LCI or various other city departments just because they've had questions.
Well, other than Ward 25, I get a newsletter almost every week from Adam Rashan, sometimes two. He's our alder.
Adam's really
and
good.
And he's given us so much information about how to access every part of government, what meetings are coming up. Have you seen his newsletter?
I have.
It's awesome.
And you know, I disagree with Adam in regards to some of the financial policy at times, but he is always a super engaged alder. Mm-hmm. You know, he always attends the CMT meetings. Well, not always. You know, sometimes he's got things that come up in regards to it. But he always gives me a heads up if he's going to be late or is not going to be there. And in all honesty, since their attendance to the CMT meetings are voluntary, you know.
And what about his newsletter information? Is that part of what you're patting yourself after to get that information out if you're elected? Are you saying you'll do the same thing? Let people know where to call and what things are coming up?
Yeah, correct. And on that note, and I always get flack for actually pointing out things that Daryl has done. So he did send out a newsletter this year, which I was very happy to see. I did not see one last year, kind of the joke between my neighbors and I. No, so I got two on the same day. So I got a double mailing of his mailing.
How often would you do a newsletter?
So you can, the alders can do two. So they get two free ones that they get to mail out. But
Adam gets it every week.
So does he mail it out or does it go out via email?
Email.
Right. So that's different. So I've never gotten an email from Daryl in regard, but he also just doesn't communicate with me. So that could be part of that.
But email newsletter, will you do an email newsletter?
Absolutely.
Adam? How they're, often?
So I guess I would try and do a weekly one. You know, they're fairly easy and straightforward to set up. You know, we've got MailChimp through the CMT. We push those out.
Yeah, you do a good job. I get those MailChimps to the CMT.
Thank you. I would take credit, except the majority of those are done by Lane Driscoll, who is our secretary, and she has done a fabulous job. It is leaps and bounds.
So you're hearing communication, crime, quality of life. What are you telling people about crime? And are people exaggerating the crime?
No, I don't think people are exaggerating the crime, but you know, and some of it boils around perspective. It's hard, especially nowadays when information is so easily available. You can hear about every single crime that occurs. Mm-hmm. Which then,
as a matter of fact, I just got the Westville Community Management Team, West Hills. I mean, Top Cop Elliot Rose sends out every week.
The blotter.
There hasn't been a lot.
No, luckily things seem to be trailing down a little bit. I know we've had a couple of violent incidences in the past couple of months.
So, what's your thoughts on crime? Are you for crisis response team, or do you think it's more cops? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of the both, and I think especially at this time in our country, we're really taking a hard look at how policing is accomplished. What's the best route to accomplish these goals?
So, what are some thoughts you have on that?
So, I would like to see a build out of the crisis response team. I'd like to see a lot of definition in regards to how they're going to operate. You know, in regards to response, what kind of issues are they responding to? You know, I had, because I was actually talking to my neighbor about this, we had an incident where one of our other neighbors across the street, older gentleman, had a bit of a breakdown. I believe he was let go from his job or whatnot and had kind of a crisis. He was inside his home. He may have had a weapon. It was just him. But I got home and the entire place is surrounded by, like, there's officers on my porch.
Oh, on West Prospect.
On West Prospect.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. But it's the sort of situation where I would have, at least from what I know of it, you know, that would have started out as a crisis response situation.
Although he had the gun, so that would have been a case. Because this thing, the outside estimate, the most ambitious is 10% of the calls will go to a crisis response team.
Oh, interesting.
So it's 90% still won't. And that's an ambitious one. So like in that case, because they're going to say if you might get shot, they want a cop there.
Yeah, no.
So that guy had a gun, absolutely. So a cop's going to be there.
Yes, yes. An officer would be there. But it's also the discussion of like who's the point? Like just because you're working on a project, some aspect of the team, you know, some team may be the focus or leading
it. And the SWAT people do get some. They get some of the negotiators. I've seen them do a good job. But I guess a lot of times they're worried about the cases where it escalates. There is no gun.
Yeah.
And then the cop ends up shooting someone because they start feeling it threatened by something that escalates.
I know, which is
tough for the cop.
I mean,
to be in those situations and not know what to do.
I mean, it's tough all around, which is one of the reasons why I think that police training and mental health is definitely something that should be expanded upon. And
how about number of cops and local cops, all that kind of stuff?
So that one's interesting because I know there's been discussions previously that like per capita, we actually have more officers than some larger cities. But I also know that we're big on community policing here. And if you have more officers that are out on the streets, that requires more officers. So you have to have money set aside in regards to that to be able to pay in staff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's then costs that come along with that. And, you know, we talk about underfunded pensions. You know, the more officers that you then hire, you have to understand how you're going to address these costs in the long term. Because you can't be promising
individual
benefits. Well, so one of the things that I think that we should shift to is defined contributions over defined benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we should just be understanding and analyzing more some of the long-term costs of our union agreements before.
Is that for all our union agreements?
Yeah, just in general. It's a good practice.
So defined contribution over defined benefits.
Yeah, correct.
So how does that work differently?
So with defined contributions, my understanding is, so defined contributions is you're putting in a certain amount of money into your pension. And then based on how much money is put in, that's how much money that you can withdraw down the line. Defined benefits is you're going, well, you know, I'm going to get X, Y, and Z benefit depending on how long.
Meaning 80% dental.
Yeah, correct.
So you might only get 40% dental if the stock market takes a bad term or inflation goes out of control.
Correct.
So if I retire and I put in X number of dollars now, I know I'm going to get to see, I know what to expect for how much dental I'm going to get. I know to expect how much it's going to cost me for different kinds of operations.
Correct.
You're saying don't guarantee that. Just guarantee you'll never have to pay more than you say you're putting in, but that it will change based on the cost.
The difficulties with how we're doing things now with the defined benefits versus defined contributions is the city doesn't necessarily understand what the real cost of things are.
Yeah.
And so we make promises that we can't keep. And one thing that we've seen, and not that it's necessarily happened in this state, but we've seen it in other states in regards to private organizations, is that courts have decided, okay, well, if you made promises as an organization that you can't keep, people are just going to have to deal with it to some degree. I never want that to become
the case. The private sector tends to have defined contribution.
Right.
And are you talking about IRAs or no? Some different question.
So, I mean,
401k.
Yeah, so it'd probably be IRA. We would have to look at the funding mechanisms and what would be the best route.
So this is contrary to what you were saying about when the city plans on other financial matters. You want people to know what to expect in 1 year and 5 years. Couldn't one make the same argument for defined, acknowledging your point that it's hard to plan?
Yep.
Can't one make the same argument about defined contribution, defined benefit pensions that we should be able to know if we put our life online or a cop does for 20 years, 25 years, that if they've been promised you're going to be able to afford health care, you're going to be able to get sick, you're going to be able to go to the dentist, that they shouldn't be up to the whims of the market?
So to a degree, I understand, and I very much appreciate that point, but it hits on the reality of the situation, which is, you know, we don't plan effectively or well as a municipality.
Right, and your point is well taken that everyone's in pension trouble because you're able to give benefits in the short term for politicians to get reelected, and they don't worry about the cost. That comes 20 years later. Connecticut's been dealing with that. New Haven's dealing with that. I see that point. I'm just wondering whether the solution could be one that's more in line with what you want for taxpayers.
So
where could you, for instance, not promise more than you can deliver, but say, for instance, you know, you got to wait a little longer till you retire, or we're not going to promise you quite as much as we said, but you can be able to count on it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if someone could lay out that plan for me and the numbers work, I would totally be on board for it.
All right, we've negotiated it.
Yeah,
all right.
There
and
we
that's
go.
We've done that. We've still got time left on Dateline New Haven, WNHH New Haven's home for community radio, 103.5 FM. We're talking to Joshua Van Hoosen, who's a very welcome guest on this show often. He's running for Ward Alder, 26th Ward, and he's also the chairman or president of a community management team. So it's criticism that the management team doesn't represent the neighborhood enough, both West Hills area, which is poorer and blacker.
Yep.
Most people there are whiter and middle class from Westville. And that even on the that end of the district in the Westville, upper Westville section of Beverly Hills, it's more racially mixed than and economically mixed than the CMT. What tell me about that?
So it is something that a bunch of alders have brought up in a lot of different contexts that it's true. The CMT is not a huge representation of, you know, the ward, the district, the area. And it's something that we are working on.
Mm-hmm. You know, how are you working on that?
So outreach. Woo. So honestly, I've been talking the CMT up. One of the things that I had asked of the alders at one point was if we could be put on their mailing. So that they had information about the CMT meetings and when we meet, and so we could have more engagement. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's my goal. The more the merrier.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of important information that kind of filters through the meeting.
What about meetings used to be held on Valley Street on the West Hills side. Now they're held on Fountain Street on the upper Westville side. Any thought about moving them back there, or was it just that most people who were showing up had to go to a place where they didn't live?
So I guess that's an interesting, because I didn't realize that it was in like a different place before.
Fewer people went.
Oh, interesting.
So people didn't go.
Huh.
They moved it here. A lot of people went, but it was the more privileged people. Now, it's also a story about democracy, right? Often, and it's not an excuse. It's not a
yep.
even thing. It's okay. The people who show up to anything do not always represent the majority. They represent the people who either have the means to show up, the time to show up, the inclination to show up, and other people show up. And that in democracy, few issues are decided by the 50+1 majority. It's decided by the people who show up, correct?
Yeah, which is true, and unfortunate to a degree. I will say in regards to people being able to participate, even when we do move back to a physical location, we'll still have a digital aspect. So that will always continue on, as long as I'm chair, at least.
Uh-huh. When are you going to go back in person?
I don't know. So we've been having some discussions with that because we had questions about it previously. We talked a little bit about it as an executive team. It's a couple months back. We weren't necessarily comfortable moving in that direction yet. And part of it was like vaccination rates. You know, we were having an increase in infections at the time. So we went better safe than sorry. You know, we'll hold back, especially because a lot of the people who do show up may, but not a lot, but at least some of them may be in the, you know, challenged criteria. Regards to older health issues.
So Joshua Van Hoosen, when I met you and you were first running for office in your mid-20s, I guess,
yeah.
You used to carry around in your pocket a book, I think it was Common Sense by Thomas Paine.
Yes.
You don't have it on you anymore, though.
Well, I don't have it on me now. So
where is it? Dog-eared?
No, so it's on my bookshelf at home, but I've been reading through another one, which is The Justice Imperative, which is about criminal justice system in Connecticut, its development, kind of the issues as they've been recognized over the years, and some of the legislation.
Who wrote that?
Oh, I can't remember offhand.
And what are you taking from that?
Man, our criminal justice system is screwed up.
And how would we fix it? Or what are some things we can do? That's another systemic.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that goes into that. It's kind of mind-boggling at time. But I think things like the task force are a kind of a good step.
What task force? The state one.
Well, the state one, and also when we're talking about our crisis response team. So, mm-hmm. like, the goal is, because jail and prison should be an area of reform. It's not necessarily, let's get rid of these people, let's remove them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can keep people out of jail to begin with and kind of get that reformation portion, or not even, you know, address the issue before it gets to that part, I think that's the best solution ever.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, we really do need to focus on the refer sorry, my pronunciation of things is terrible at times.
Reformation.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I had a speech issue when I was younger, and I went through...
Patricia Kane. Hi, Patricia. It's very thoughtful questions and answers. I'm not Josh's constituent, but appreciate his take on the issues. That's Patricia, who's running as a Green in Ward 13. And I think I would say that she has more good ideas per capita than anyone I've met in New Haven.
I love her
ideas are so... but her ideas are so interesting. Like, she actually... she goes to all the master meetings, as you know, because you're on one.
Yep.
To get people sort of at a grassroots level to support ideas like this. This notice thing is whack.
Yeah, she came.
If they could do something on your block, and you rent an apartment, you will not find out there's a zoning meeting. Something might go on your block, but if the person who owns the building lives in Florida,
yep,
they'll get a notice. I mean, that's crazy. I don't understand why everyone doesn't just stop now and just say, good point, Patricia. We're stopping that. Let's just do this. I mean, but it doesn't happen. Or the one about, you know, selling playground and green spaces.
Yeah.
She really gets going at the, she gets going at that grassroots level. I think she's a great citizen.
Yeah, I think she's fabulous. She has very thoughtful comments in the New Haven Independent articles.
Although she got whacked in the article we wrote about her race. People were being hard on her.
For the minimum
wage. She's like the only candidate probably in the history of New Haven who has given kids some money to drop off stuff. Like, here's $10, you know, spend an hour putting some flyers. Man, she got laughed.
I know. I do feel bad in regards
so bad
to that
for her.
They did kind of have a little bit of a point.
Well, no, there
say,
are legal issues. It was a legitimate debate.
Yep.
It's that whole thing in comments. It can hurt sometimes, and it's really not about good people or bad people. It's like, she would have been better off legally not to pay the kids and exploit them.
Right.
What a world. So, criminal justice system. What about race and policing? Was this, did you like, it says no good deed goes unpunished. What did you think about the state law that your party hated with about the police changes?
Oh, for some of it, I just told them to get over
immunity.
It was so frustrating. Oh, you're tying the hands of police. And
I don't get that part. Just because of the immunity for police to do things wrong?
I don't know. And there's so many layers to unpeel in regards to that legislation. There was, and I haven't looked it over for a while, but there are only a couple of portions where I do think that they could have done a better job. Like, there are some that, like, even if a police officer was, and please someone correct me if I'm wrong in regards to this, if an officer was, like, accused of something, but it turned out that, like, they found him innocent or not culpable or whatnot, his name and information could still be exposed on, like, a list of individuals who went up for some sort of...
Mm-hmm.
review. That one raises my eyebrow a little bit. I do think we have to be careful in those regards.
But what about the qualified immunity? What about a cop who's done something clearly illegal, taking people's life away or endangering and knowingly? And
I don't.
Is it a problem if they don't have immunity?
No, I don't think it's a problem. And honestly, as a resident, I don't want my tax money paying for those sorts of legal troubles. And at the end of the day, like, we have to foot that bill. Like, the mm-hmm. municipality has footed bills for improper behaviors in the past, and I don't want to be responsible for that.
And then, so that gets to the question of the Republican Party. So you're running as a Republican.
Yes.
And you're not a liberal, right? You're not a Democrat.
Mm-mm.
But are you a Republican? I mean, what's going on with that?
People ask me that all the time. So from my perspective, I call myself an old school Republican.
What does that mean?
It's the small government. You know, usually the smallest unit of organization is the one best suited to, like, identify and resolve the issue. I don't necessarily think government is the best solution to a lot of these issues. I think government can create the environment in which individuals and organizations thrive,
mm-hmm.
but I don't necessarily think it's always the government's job to, like, do these tasks.
And but it goes beyond that, right? Because I mean, most Democrats would agree with that, right?
Yeah, which is why it's surprising that so many Democrats seem to be kind of throwing me under the bus for being a Republican, where I'm like, we literally seem to agree on like 90% of...
But why are you a Republican? I mean, right now, the Republican Party nationally local elections have become national. All politics was local until 5 minutes ago. Now, from Guilford to Brantford to all sorts of places, all over the country, local elections seem to be going on this new phenomenon of Trump Republicans who believe, first of all, you have to say that the January 6th election was stolen.
Okay.
You have to oppose Black Lives Matter and support the people who rallied on January 6th. You have to be against vaccination and kids wearing masks, right? I mean, wouldn't you agree that that is the most common description of Republicans right now in America?
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I think that is.
Well, where do you stand on those? Who won the election?
Oh, I mean, Biden won the election. I voted for him. I mean, goodness.
And then who? What do you think about January 6th uprising?
It made me incredibly sad. Like, I was incredibly sad that day is something that has... I'm a systems guy, and I very much consider myself a patriot. So when you see, like, the systems of your country kind of being torn down and thrown aside, it hurts. Mm-hmm. It I've talked to my therapist about it.
Well, what do you think is happening now with people in your party and Trump? What has it done to the party?
It's just like this gut reaction, it seems, at this point. And everyone has weird perspectives or different perspectives. Everyone has their different sources of information. And how human nature works is that if you see something that you agree with, you're more likely to shut out information that disagrees with that. And with social media.
Well, I mean, if we want to talk about vaccinations, masks, COVID, nobody really knows the answer, right? There's very legitimate disagreements about what the best thing to do because nobody knows for sure. Would you agree with me, though, there's an element of crazy?
Yes.
That, like, there's a guy running in Hamden who said that Democrats protest mandates. Harry says this stuff could be debated, but they're threatening people's lives.
Yeah, that's not appropriate. That's not okay.
People running for office in Hamden, there was a guy on a video that he puts a magnet on your arm if you got a vaccine because he says the secret metal. I mean, this stuff is crazy.
Yes, but I had a conversation with my coworker about this because they had seen a video or like a YouTube video of like an organization that like demonstrated how these caused you to be magnetized and so on and so forth. It's impossible. By physics, it's impossible. And I can explain this why to anyone who's actually interested in the
science.
But
you know what? It's just crazy.
It is just crazy.
But Harry points out, I think it's a good description for someone who doesn't agree with the Democrats or someone who does. Democrats believe in cradle-to-grave government. And that's sort of what the big bill, the reconciliation bill before Congress, right? That is the idea. That whether it's starting out with the child tax credit and child care to going to when you're older and you can afford to go to a dentist through Medicare, the Democrats definitely are trying to have more of a Western European social liberal country where the safety net protects you from birth to death.
Yes.
And American tradition has run up against that, right? All right. Yep. And legitimate Republicans. I'm not talking about wacko Marjorie Green Taylor Greene, right? I'm talking about like people who end up being as righteous as much as the Democrats talking about this stuff. They are skeptical of group solutions. They're skeptical of government as the best way to address a problem. Are you still have that skepticism? Do you disagree with the reconciliation bill about early childhood and Medicare paying for dental?
In all honesty, I have not looked into the details of that. I've been trying to focus on New Haven and the local stuff, and I know I got no impact, whether I agree with it or not at this point.
But what's happened to your thinking? Didn't you resign from the State Central Committee?
I did. So I resigned from State Central. RTC. And it's just because, and I think you've kind of painted a picture of it. I don't think the structured, organized Republican Party is doing a very good job at showing the Republican ideals as I view them and I was raised with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't need tweets about King Ned or any of this silliness. Like, the hyperbole disappoints me. And I've, you know, even though from my perspective, the Republican Party has been more so on that, I have seen the same sort of, you know, it's lower level at this point. It's not insurrection.
I think the Democrats invented it, and I'm part of the problem. I think it was we who way exaggerated about George W. Bush. Now, I disagree with Bush about a lot of things.
Yep.
But worst president ever. We all said that as though we knew who all the presidents were and what their records were.
Right.
Did not give him credit for things he did right. There were bumper stickers. He was Darth Vader. I think that both sides have been equally culpable in creating this hate culture and simplifying issues and memes slogans. I do feel the Republicans have taken it now off a rail of craziness that has seeped to where a strong majority of the country believes that the election was stolen, even when these crazy Republican, quote, vote counters couldn't even alleged they couldn't find the bamboo fibers that allegedly showed up from dead Venezuelans in the ballots in Arizona, and they still couldn't do it. But a majority still does. That just seems to be a level of crazy that I can't get my arms around.
Yeah, and it's disappointing. I mean, it's more than disappointing. The audit thing, that really frustrated me, because I've worked elections. You know, if I'm not running for office, I've been sitting there all day, you know, checking people in. And actually, Paul Chambers called me last night, because he's going to miss me this. He was like, yeah, I'm sure you know you can't work elections because you're running for office. I went, I know. You know, I'm going to really miss you, though. And, you know, so it was nice to know that I'm...
Okay, you resigned from the committees. But you're still, and also you're the only Republican. The Republicans, I'm giving them a lot of credit in New Haven this year. Because first of all, even though we know they love Trump, they're not running on that.
Correct.
They're genuinely presenting a local platform that is different from the Democrats. It's intelligent. They have a lot of energy. Yeah. They have very viable, legitimate candidates, whether you like them or not. I'm not saying you should vote for them or not vote for them. Just right. That we have, for the first time in 14 years, a mayoral race and I think 5 alder races where you have real candidates.
Yeah, and
in Ward 13, 3 candidates, which is terrific.
I applaud them all going out there and doing.
But yet,
I think
you're not with
important.
The slate.
No, and actually, so I had declared that I was running for alder before the slate was even a thought in the mind. Mm-hmm. So they hadn't had any sort
of. But don't you want those advantages? Like I went to a Daryl Brackeen event on Sunday, and it was a very good event. Ward 26 Democratic Ward Committee. This is what you want to have in politics. Where neighbors of all backgrounds get together and work on campaigns together because they agree with a certain set of values.
Yeah, and I'm having one of those events at my house next week. So.
Oh, you're okay. 50 streets, but it's a little late in the game, right? They've been, every election, they have an army.
Yes.
That you're going up against.
Yep.
And I think it's a good army. I think it's good. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with them. I think you guys should have an army too. Is that you should have people who agree with a set of values to go out and work to elect those values in teams of people, not just individuals. Do you agree with that or not?
So in theory, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. But one thing that I was definitely, and it's why I'm not on the slate, is I'm very mindful of how I present things and policy, and I don't want to necessarily be, you know, and they could do it with the best intentions, but if someone says something, you know, controversial or is taken the wrong way or says, you know, a policy point that I may not agree with, you know, I'm all of a
sudden...
That
is a tricky thing. If you want to be with a team... You have to understand there's compromise and that your team is going to say something you don't agree with. If you're an individual who thinks for yourself, that's why I've never been in politics and I would stink at it.
Yep.
So I don't want to disagree with us first before I get on to them, right? The things that aren't true. So I guess you're a little bit like that, kind of individualist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my friends tell me I'm a terrible politician anyways. I'm too honest.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that how do you get to be part of a team?
Yep.
So now not only do you go up against an organized force, which is legal and legitimate, which is Democratic 100%. Party, but you're not even willing to go with the remnants of a tiny Republican force to help you out.
No, it's not that I'm not willing. There's been individuals who have offered to.
I don't mean that. It's not a criticism.
Yeah,
I'm trying to understand the decision. You're a solo flyer. You're taking on a big organization. You're also not. You're also deciding not to take advantage of the little bits of organization that exist on your side. Maybe it doesn't help. Maybe you don't need their money. They don't have enough people to spread out and share.
I mean, in all honesty, you know, though they've offered help, and again, there's some great individuals over there, I found it's most productive for me to be the face that's knocking the door, the individual talking with you, and, you know, you're not dealing with...
But why don't you run independent? Why are you running Republican if the brand's been so tarnished?
Oh, so part of that actually has to, you know, independent versus Republican. So part of it is you get minority party representation if you're elected as a Republican on the committees and commissions within New Haven.
You also get it if you're an independent. You get the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Which is a little tricky because then they can just get all the Democrats to re-register unaffiliated to qualify.
Yeah, correct.
But actually, that doesn't make any difference. If you were elected as a Republican or you get appointed, you could do the same thing as unaffiliated.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought of it that way. And again, part of it is because, you know, I still hold the perspective that I have these Republican ideals that I was raised with and... So that's what I'm running as.
Well, now I want to put some words in your mouth.
Oh, go for it.
Okay. You believe that you're the Republican.
I'm the
Republican Party has a set of values that's different from the Democratic Party.
Yep.
Has a long history and that you haven't changed.
I haven't, yes.
The leaders of the party have. And that the minute the leaders of the party change, that doesn't mean you have to leave. It means you could still be the part of the party.
Yeah, correct.
That's holding the old banner.
Absolutely. Like,
I mean, do you have hopes that the Republican Party is going to recover from its insanity and become a Republican Party again?
Yes, and that is actually one of the reasons why I continue to run as well as a Republican, because I hope to show individuals that you can get elected without demagoguery and do it on good policy.
Wow, okay. Now, has the Republicans in New Haven said anything you disagreed with in this campaign?
Not that I have seen, though. I will point out one. So I like John Carlson very much, but his comparison in the debate of like Republicanism and like race or gender is not accurate from my perspective. Uh-huh. I thought that was a little inappropriate. I understand what he was getting at, but
see, I give him a total pass on that. I think some people haven't spent a lot of time in gender and ethnic studies courses, which are great courses,
right?
And like, but is the intention, given his relationship with people of color and living in a working class neighborhood and having people on the slate who aren't white, I kind of think that adds up more to me than,
yeah.
Well, I don't like, think the guy's a racist.
Yeah, and you know, I know someone gave him some flack in the New Haven Independent article about there's a question about whether individuals understood Spanish when Elicker had responded to one of the questions. It's not that he didn't want it's not that John Carlson didn't want individuals responding in Spanish. He just wanted to make sure that everyone who was there.
Well, that was interesting because when Tony Hart ran against Elicker, and they had the same debate in the same place, and he spoke Spanish, which he always does in this cheesy way. Look at me, I'm speaking Spanish now, but it's okay. Yep. You're running for politics, it's cheesy. I thought Harp gave a really disingenuous answer, which is that she wasn't getting the Latino support. She had a large black contingent in the audience that yelled for her in support when she said, "You see what an elitist he is? We don't get to understand that." I thought that was disingenuous. Whereas Carlson's point was, he could have explained it better, was, "That's great. Can you translate it now?"
Right.
Yeah. But that's not a big deal. But what about vaccines? You have people on that slate who are not vaccinated. Who work in healthcare,
which
who
I disagree
see
with.
Patients, right? So, yep. Like, they can kill people. And again, as Harry points out, a lot of Democrats aren't for vaccines. But if you look at blue state, red state, there's no question that the Republican Party has it as a position, and elected Democrats that has the opposite position, openly supporting vaccination. You have governors, like in Tennessee, I think it is, who were the biggest and Alabama biggest supporters of vaccines in the country. Their governments mandated every vaccine, but now because of the insanity about this vaccine, they're suddenly against forcing vaccination and saving lives.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Well, where do you stand on vaccines and COVID?
Oh, I mean, I got vaccinated. I got both my jabs. I hate needles. They make me pass out. I feel sick and woozy the entire rest of the day. I get super anxious about it. I got both those shots.
Ugh. Well, how do you feel about the Republican Party? I always thought the Republican Party was the public health party. I mean, what do you think of the Republican Party, all their elected officials swearing, taking the side of the people who are against vaccines, fighting for freedom, right? That's what Harry says, freedom. Yep. The freedom not to get a vaccine and kill other people, which violates the very basic tenet, the very basic tenet of libertarianism, that the government should never make you do anything you don't want to do unless it hurts somebody else. That's what I can't figure out with this argument. You're a libertarian. What am I missing? I mean, the basic tenet of freedom from government for the individual is that you never have to do something as long as you're not hurting somebody else.
Yeah,
if you don't get a vaccine, you have much greater risk of killing somebody by spreading COVID, which is a deadly disease.
Yeah.
Which is why Republican governors, including current Biden governors, supported all the other kinds of vaccines.
Yep.
So what am I missing here about that in theory?
I don't know. We're on the same page.
So are you for mandatory vaccines?
Yeah, definitely. And okay, so for example, you know, both Connecticut and New York and Rhode Island got slammed by Republicans because of the retirement homes and COVID making into the retirement homes and kind of how they dealt with that.
Yeah, you see, there's a thing. Harry Drew says, well, you don't get a flu shot, you're a murderer. The death rate from flu and COVID, I mean, that's like comparing jackhammers and paperclips.
And there's a difference also. When we talk about the flu, that's not one strain. When we talk about the flu, I think it's like 32 strains that are under a single umbrella.
I did get my flu shot, but yeah.
Right. So
but it's not an epidemic of people dying and hospitals being overrun by a contagious disease. That's a pandemic. Pandemic is different from ongoing diseases.
Yeah. So requiring mandates for vaccines, especially in places of healthcare and retirement homes, that just seems like a no-brainer to me. Mm-hmm. And to disallow private organizations or organizations from doing that is...
And what happened to Republicans being for, like, 2 minutes ago, they were
right,
for,
against
like,
big government. If, and
yeah,
now
like, your company should be everyone who wants you. Maybe you're discriminate against gay people. You should be, you know, horrible about force religion. But all of a sudden, you can't force a healthcare worker not to kill an elderly patient?
Potentially kill. And I do think we have to be a little careful in regard. You know, just because you're unvaccinated doesn't necessarily mean you're out killing people. You have a very higher statistical chance of getting infected, spreading that.
And actually here in New Haven, I believe that we're in an endemic now, and I'm not worried about being around people unvaccinated. I think they're at bigger risk right now.
Yeah.
I think in Alaska, it's different, in Montana. But anyway, so you're for mandates.
Yeah.
But including being tested rather than getting the shot.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically you support Lamont and Ehrlicher's position.
I'd have to look at the details. Again, I'm a big details individual.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention, Joshua Van Hoosen, before we... It's always a pleasure having you.
Oh, goodness. Things I'd like to mention. Yeah, go out and vote. Give me a shout. Go to my website. Learn what I'm about. Don't, you know, ignore the hyperbole.
What is your website?
Oh, so it's ward26.us, because we're all in this together.
Okay. Not us against them.
No. Okay. And that's, I guess that's what I really hate about politics at this point, is it seems like it is us against them. And I really hate that, because it really should just be about the policy and the solutions and how we're moving forward in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, good luck in whether or not you win this race. Good luck in your continuing efforts, whether it's the management team, running for office, other neighborhood work, to support the idea, promote the idea of policies and solutions rather than us versus against them.
There we go.
I got to admit, that's why I love having you on Dateline New Haven, WNHH. Jeff, who's in it? We're also going to have Dow Brackeen on, because we love having both sides and everyone who's willing to take time out of their busy lives to run for office to try to make New Haven a better place. So, Josh Van Hoosen, thank you for doing that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Thanks for the comments. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night. A WNHH FM, New Haven's home for community radio.